listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you updated on the news that made headlines around our area this last week. Today, our panel includes Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, Rachel Spacek with the Idaho Press, and Mike Sharp, executive producer with Idaho News 6. Happy Friday, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
Thanks, Gemma.
All right. Well, lots to talk about, guys. So let's start with the pandemic and frankly, how Idaho seems to be in a free fall when it comes to what's going on. And Kevin, let's just start with the fact that the numbers, I think to put it mildly, aren't looking good. They're pretty alarming.
They certainly are. We set a record for most new cases in one day on Tuesday, and we also set a new record for deaths, one-day record for deaths, both on Thursday. Widespread increases in case numbers. I mean, we're kind of a metaphor. We're kind of a microcosm of what's happening nationally. It's a national outbreak that doesn't seem to be sparing any part of the country. Same thing can be said for Idaho. I mean, this is an outbreak that's happening really from one corner of the state to the other.
And in fact, I mean, medical professionals are quite concerned about having to triage care. In fact, one of the doctors from St. Luke's Health System, the largest health system in Idaho, was on national television earlier this week, basically saying that this is a dire situation. And I think, Mike, can we talk a little bit about I guess some new mandates, right? One of them being that Boise Mayor McLean had a medical briefing with quite a few of these doctors on Tuesday, and then yesterday came out with basically enforcements is the best way to put it, correct? Like, just, you know, now if you're not going to, I mean, we've had a mass mandate in Boise for months now, but frankly, no enforcement of the policy.
Right. And this is one of the things that, you know, the libertarian wing of the Republican Party has been warning people about is that eventually with these orders comes enforcement. And really, if things aren't being done correctly or according to the order, I mean, it's really toothless without some sort of enforcement. So the city of Boise is encouraging the public to make phone calls if they see businesses that are operating without proper social distancing guidelines, without proper masking, to call and encourage enforcement so that Boise police would then show up and ticket them and possibly even remove licensing.
Right. I mean, to the point that they're saying that if businesses pose what they're calling a clear and immediate threat, they could have a license suspended for 10 days on a first violation, second violation, 20 days, a third violation, a 1 year, they'll revoke the license for a year. And yes, this could be devastating to businesses. But we're at this point where I think, you know, if you listen to the science and to the scientific experts and the medical professionals on the front line, that this idea of personal responsibility hasn't worked.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear when you look at the numbers that something is not working. I think there are a lot of people who are trying to operate with personal responsibility. We talked about different orders across the state. I was talking this morning with a city councilor in Lewiston, where they just passed a mask mandate, and she voted against the mask order. And I asked her why, and I asked her opinions on it. She said, "Look, Mike, I'm for masks. I believe in the science of masks. I just know our population well enough. They're not going to respond well to a mask mandate. The people who are currently wearing masks are going to continue wearing masks. The people who are not wearing masks are going to dig their heels in. They are not going to wear masks. So then it becomes a problem for local enforcement. How does that really work? How do these local police officers interact with these individuals that have spent months fighting these mask mandates? It just falls to them. It becomes somebody else's problem."
Right. And I think we need to be very clear on this, because part of it, the argument of people who aren't wearing masks, and we've heard this across the country, is that a mandate is not a law. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It is a law. And with laws come consequences if you don't follow them. Police enforce seatbelts, police enforce the speed limit. And it's frankly, I think, very easy to say it's the same thing. But you're right that without enforcement, then people don't have to follow that. So we are now at this level of having to do something more drastic, like enforcement. And talking about the mask mandates, Mike, you brought up Lewiston, but Rachel, some other areas of the state yesterday also put in some mask mandates. So can you start with what you know? And I know, Kevin, you had talked earlier before the show about some as well, because we're seeing kind of little by little now more mask mandates going into place here in Idaho.
Yeah, we are. So from the list I have, the Pocatello City Council passed an ordinance 4-2 yesterday. The Panhandle Health District also passed a mask mandate, a 60-day mask mandate. And then I think it happened this week that Custer County also has a mask mandate. And then I think Bonneville County and Madison County are, I don't think they're new mandates, but, you know, just to add them to the roundup of places that do have mm-hmm. mandates. And we heard at the top of the program about South Central District Health, that includes Twin Falls, and they, you know, had the mandate on their agenda. They discussed it, but then decided against moving it forward.
And Kevin, I mean, we know the Twin Falls City Council took this up a week or so ago, tabled it. It's been tabled again now by the health district there. Yet Twin Falls is not just a hot spot, but the hospital there has literally had to close certain services like pediatrics, for example.
There really isn't a direct connection between the communities that have refused to do a mask mandate as opposed to those who have imposed a mask mandate and what's actually happening on the ground with case numbers and hospitalizations. And let's remember the reason we're here is because Governor Little has been steadfast, or some would say stubborn, about refusing to issue a statewide mask mandate, even when we're seeing other states doing this. You know, earlier this week, the governor of Iowa, who had been skeptical about a mask mandate, instituted just such a mandate, proving once again that Iowa and Idaho are two different states. But here's the thing, Gemma. As I was doing research for a different story this week, the University of Washington's modeling, which has been one of the gold standard models for what may happen with this pandemic. A lot of folks have cited the folks at UW. University of Washington says that right now, Idaho's at 800 COVID-19 deaths, or a little bit north of 800. By March 1st, we could be looking at 2,650 deaths, triple our death toll by March 1st. That's devastating. Mm-hmm. And in their modeling, they say that if you had universal mask usage, that death toll would come in at 1,750. Now, that's still devastating. That's still doubling our death toll within a three and a half month period. It would be horrible, and the human toll would be catastrophic. But you're talking about a difference of 900 deaths, 900 lives saved, if that modeling were to bear out.
And I think it's safe to say when Governor Little held his news conference last week, rolling Idaho back into a quasi phase two, and then bringing in the National Guard. I mean, no disrespect to the governor. I would not want to be in his shoes and having to make the decisions that he is making. But with that being said, he did everything possible to not implement a mask mandate. And Kevin, not only the state of Iowa, but like North Dakota also put a mask mandate in place.
And I was struck as I listened to the governor last Friday. He said repeatedly that he felt like it was a messaging issue.
Right.
And you know, he brought out a young woman who suffered from COVID-19, brought out a nurse to talk about the issue, to try to personalize the issue. But he said repeatedly that it was a failure to message the importance of wearing masks and taking other steps. We're 8 months into this pandemic. If we haven't messaged this thing out yet, I don't know if we ever will. I don't know if you're ever going to get across to people 8 months in some way that you haven't been able to otherwise. I was kind of taken aback by all of that.
I do think it's important to know, you know, you talk about Governor Little, you know, having covered him from his time, even in the state legislature. I mean, he's a conservative. And I know that that's just a word people throw around and everybody kind of takes it a little bit differently. But I don't read it as necessarily stubbornness or a lot of people on the left are accusing him of cowardice. And a lot of words are being thrown around. He's a believer that policy is best as local as you can get it. And he has continued to try and push for his political ideology with which he's built an entire career, and it's not working. And I think I think it takes time to shift your brain to have to pivot away from something that largely it's a political philosophy you've built your entire career on. And the thing I'm watching for is the state numbers in Utah. I've been told by a few different experts to watch those numbers in Utah. They ordered that mask mandate last weekend, Friday or something. If those numbers start to drop, I think with as close as the people of Idaho and Utah, as well as the leadership of Idaho and Utah are, if you really start to see a change in numbers and a real positive effect, I think that will be kind of another chink in the armor of resistance from the governor, because at some point more has to happen. You can't just continue to blame messaging. At some point, more encouragement needs to happen if the local officials, as we've seen, are begging for leadership higher than them, and by higher, I mean up the food chain when it comes to overall power in the state. If they continue to ask for that help, I think at some point the governor will have to do something to help them.
You're right, Mike. I mean, the governor said over and over again, like, local control, right? Local control. They need to make the decisions, but it's not working. We're going to take a break because we're going to continue this conversation talking about schools and where we are, because this is a trickle-down effect. So we have to get into the nuance of this as well. So more Idaho Matters coming up next. Continuing with our reporter roundtable now, our panel today, Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News, Rachel Spacek with the Idaho Press, and Mike Sharp, executive producer with Idaho News 6. So as we were leaving the conversation in the last segment, I mentioned schools because the pandemic is having a major impact on schools. Just last week, the Boise School District announced that it would once again go back online after Thanksgiving and would not go to back to in-person learning, I believe, until January 19th after the Martin Luther King holiday. So Rachel, can you update us on what's going on in Canyon County? Because some school districts there have made some similar decisions.
Yes, so we saw the Caldwell School District has decided to move into remote learning after Thanksgiving. And I believe they're committed to staying in remote until January 4th. They were previously in a hybrid model. And I think the key thing from listening to that board meet this week, Caldwell has a pretty good sized population of Latino students and Latino families that are enrolled in the district. And as we've been seeing, as I feel like I've been repeating throughout this pandemic, Latinos are disproportionately impacted by the virus. And so this was a key thought from the board chairman, Maricela Piscina, because she, you know, she's a Latina and she's been seeing her friends and family members get the virus. And she's just thinking about the Latino families in the Caldwell School District. And that was a major part of her push to move the school district back into remote learning.
Yeah. And then, Mike, I know it's not the same as school, but the childcare industry, I believe we need to talk about that as well, because, I mean, for a lot of working parents, before school, there's childcare where you have to place your child so you can go to work.
Right. It's a really odd, delicate balance happening right now, because childcare programs are suffering from lack of funding coming to their programs because fewer parents are putting their kids in these childcare programs, while at the same time, these essential workers who have been working this entire time have needed to put their children in these centers. all the while a virus is spreading and occasional shutdowns are happening and schools and daycare centers are having to try to fund rapid testing for childcare providers and cover those costs. And it's just, it's beginning to really stack up at this point. And I can tell you, you know, these teachers, the people, the administrators who are running these schools, mm-hmm. in the conversation we had with Beth Oppenheimer, who's not only on the school board for the Boise School Board, but she's also, she runs the Idaho Association for the Education of Young Children. She's saying, look, like, we're in a desperate need and the job pays $9 an hour on average. There's very few benefits, if any at all. Access to insurance is low. And we're putting these people at risk as well. And so it's just, it continues to snowball for these centers, and they're in a dire situation as we move into next year. Depending on what happens with the economy, you're probably going to see centers start to close, if not already have closed. And then where do parents turn to educate their kids or send them to daycare in the future as the economy becomes more robust?
Right. And then we should also note that we know that at least three schools in the Napa School District moved to online instruction yesterday, and they'll at least stay there through the end of the Thanksgiving break. And this is because so many staff members have tested positive for COVID. And Rachel, that goes back also to this idea that there just aren't enough substitute teachers because this is affecting staff members.
Yeah, so the substitute teacher situation is quite dire. And I've been hearing about it here and there throughout the pandemic. But, you know, until I actually started digging into it, I didn't realize how severe the substitute shortage is. Like, you know, Valley View had, they usually have around, I think, you know, 10 unfilled positions. That's kind of the greatest amount they've seen in one day in typical school years. But, you know, last week they saw 27 unfilled positions. And that means that, you know, it's an empty classroom. So the schools have to pull from wherever they can find like a body to put in a classroom. And, you know, that's taking away from work that administrators have to be doing as far as like, you know, figuring out how to move through school in the pandemic. And, you know, I've seen just so many issues that the substitute thing brings up, because teachers have to quarantine and subs are typically used to maybe, you know, being in a classroom for 1 or 2 days, but now they're in there for 14 days. And it's kind of an interesting situation. So I almost wonder if maybe that issue will also encourage districts to move online or you know, sway them to stay remote because of just the severe lack of substitute teachers available.
And then, Kevin, I'm curious about, I'd love for you to talk about the vaccines and where we're at, because we know that at least Pfizer is getting like emergency FDA approval very mm-hmm. quickly. That's going to go to frontline workers.
They applied today.
Right. But that will go to frontline workers when we get that emergency, you know, approval. Where the general public, if we're lucky, we're seeing spring, early summer. So talk about the vaccines, but then also the impact that could have on schools, because I think as parents, we're, you know, we're all just trying to figure this out, but then it's like, well, will next school year possibly be more normal, or is this next year too?
Well, let's focus on the short-term window, because there are enough questions there. Yeah. With the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines doing so well in the early trials, and the possibility that both will start to distribute in late December, it's possible that some teachers or school staff could begin to get vaccines by the end of the calendar year. I wouldn't say that that's likely, because the state's plan is that the first vaccines will go to healthcare professionals, and heaven help them. They need all the protection we can give them. So from there, school employees fit into this kind of wide class of critical employees, along with firefighters, police officers, corrections officers, daycare employees. but also with patients who are older, patients who may have some you know, underlying health issues. So somewhere along in that whole mix, school employees could start to get access to vaccines. We're probably looking more likely the early part of next year. Yeah, but a lot of questions from there. We don't really know how this is going to affect higher education. And probably the biggest thing we don't understand, I was talking to Dr. Carolyn Bridges, who's a former CDC staffer who's been dealing with vaccine issues for 25 years. She's consulting with the State Department of Health and Welfare now. We don't know how much vaccine usage you would need to get to herd immunity on the coronavirus. It, you know, obviously it's a new virus, new vaccines. You know, we don't know how, whether it'll be more like the measles where you need like 95% coverage to get to herd immunity, or would it be something lower? But we do know this, you know, Idaho, you know, a good number of Idahoans will probably not go and get the vaccine, because we've seen a good number of Idahoans opt out of other vaccines, whether it's for the measles or, you know, for, you know, other childhood vaccines that are recommended by the state. So a lot we don't know at this point, but at least there is a glimmer of optimism that, you know, these vaccines are doing well in the early trials and could start to make their way into, into Idaho in the coming weeks.
So Kevin, when it comes to, you know, teachers and staff at schools, it sounds like they are working with the state to see when they could possibly get that, but we actually kind of don't know the order then, right? I mean, first and foremost, it is those healthcare workers on the front lines.
Right. And I think a lot of what we don't know and a lot of what this will really hinge on is how much manufacturing capability will these pharmaceuticals be able to ramp up, and how many vaccines can hit the street and get into Idaho in a given amount of time. That's the thing that we don't know at this point. And that's really going to kind of drive the process. Obviously, having two vaccines that are doing well in trials doubles your potential for manufacturing capacity. So that's a good thing. There are other vaccines in the pipeline a little bit further down the road, a little bit further, you know, they're behind where Pfizer and Moderna are, but could enter into the picture at some point. So, our rooting interest as, you know, as human beings right now is, you know, let's, you know, hope science, you know, prevails here, and that you have multiple vaccines that prove to be viable.
So Mike, let's talk a little bit about the importance of taking care of ourselves. I mean, this is something that even when there isn't a pandemic, we should think about, but in particular, in a pandemic, I think also the holidays bring up, as we know, mental health issues for a lot of people. There's depression, there's loneliness. So now add in that the pandemic, and the importance really of getting help if you need it.
Yeah, I think, talking to experts, it sounds like I'm not the only person who's starting to feel it, right? I mean, it's been 8 months. Those of us lucky enough to have been working this full time have had that extra stress, and others have even worse, more difficult problems that they're dealing with. So I think there are a lot of people who have been living off the reserves of proper mental health and over the last 8 months, and those reserves are running out. And I think it's important to have the thought about scheduling your appointment with your counselor you trust, or starting the process of trying to find a counselor you trust before we hit this period that, you know, we all joke about seasonal affective disorder, but it's a very real thing. And we're coming up on a time in Idaho where it's going to be gray for a long time, for 2 months straight. And that has an effect on you. And if you're already at the end of your rope and dealing with a lot of things in your personal life, you don't want to wait until you're in crisis to try to get on the calendar for somebody. We're also in the middle of this pandemic, and doctor's offices, a lot of doctor's offices have cut back on the amount of people that can sit in the waiting room, which means there are fewer opportunities to meet somebody face to face. There are doctor's offices that are going out of business. So if you do want to continue to maintain your mental health, what the experts are saying is be proactive about it. Frankie Katafias, our reporter, talked to some experts who said, look, make the calls now. call your counselor, try to get on their calendar. You'll probably be surprised at how late you're probably going to have to schedule your appointment because they're getting booked up. But beyond that, there are other tools that are available for people who may not have insurance, who may not have access to an immediate counselor in those dire moments. It's called the Idaho Suicide Prevention Hotline, but it's not just about suicide, right? It's about people in crisis, and it's about people before they reach their crisis. If you are having a bad day and it's really building up on you, and you can tell if this goes 2 weeks longer, I'm going to be in crisis. You're not going to get yelled at for calling the Idaho Suicide Prevention Hotline. They're going to help you. And so these experts are just encouraging people to make those calls, to shoot text messages, try one of the new apps that enables you to connect with a licensed physician or a licensed counselor. Start doing that work now so that when your back's up against the wall, you have a support system that's there for you.
And I think it's very important to say that there is no shame in getting that type of help if you need it. I've talked to a counselor before. It is something that when it's needed, you do it. And it's as simple as that. And you're right, Mike, with the Idaho Suicide Hotline, they want you to call before you're in crisis, as you said. And
right.
That is
so important. Not just about the appointment itself, right? You mentioned, you know, I've spent most of my life meeting with counselors, and I've had some great counselors. I've also had some terrible counselors, and you have to go through that process of finding somebody who works with you. But it's not just about the moment where you're sitting across from somebody in that safe room, you know, talking to somebody. It's about the tools they give you so that for the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks before your next appointment, as you're managing all those stressors and as you're managing the different things that are happening to all of us, you have tools and you have resources that help you, and you're able to be a little bit more trained in your reaction to some of that stress. And that's really the important part. It's not just about sitting across from somebody.
100%. Kevin, fascinating story this week by one of your colleagues about no show students this year.
Yes, our reporter Sammy Edge did a magnificent job with this story. And what she looked at was, we know that every fall, there's a certain number of students that are expected to arrive in the schools who don't arrive, no show students. And it's kind of hard to calculate exactly how many students we're talking about, but the best we could quantify it, we're talking about 11,000 plus students who are expected to walk in the doors or expected to, you know, to log in and begin their school year who didn't. And it's really, it magnifies a reporting issue that we've had for some time, a student reporting issue that's been in place for some time. Idaho has some of the most lax laws in the nation regarding homeschooling and homeschooling reporting. It's not just about parents having the right to homeschool. In this case, we're talking about parents reporting to the state, hey, I've decided to homeschool my child. That data is really hard to come by. So quantifying the extent of this was a challenge, but what Sammy did a really good job of trying to get at the numbers and trying to, you know, to get some kind of hard figures as best as we could, but also kind of telling the story through administrators who literally go door to door and try to track down. We think a student is here, living here, but we've never heard back. So let's knock on the door and see what happens. And, you know, sometimes you find where a child is and you make that connection and then you kind of hope they show up. It's a great story, and I'm not doing it justice talking about it quickly, but the story is at IdahoEdNews.org, and I believe the Idaho Press picked it up earlier this week. So it's out there, and it's definitely worth your while.
I think it is definitely worth a read, because, I mean, when you say 11,000 students, I mean, that's a significant chunk of our young people. Rachel, you mentioned this in the top of the show about COVID-19 really, really impacting the Latinx community. And it's something that we need to keep telling people about, hence why the Caldwell School District made the decision that they made. But talk about what else is going on in regards to mass distributions in Canyon County.
Yeah, so basically I feel like we're at a point in the pandemic where maybe we assume that people know that you should wear a mask, know that some businesses will turn you away if you're not wearing a mask. But that is a little bit of a naive thought, because we are still seeing lots of Latinos, farm workers. I know specifically H-2A workers who come up for seasonal work in the fields might not know that we have a mask mandate, or that you have to wear a mask in many businesses. And so what a few organizations have been doing, including Community Council of Idaho, is, you know, trying to educate people, specifically farm workers, about wearing a mask, how to stay safe during the pandemic. And it's largely fallen on the backs of nonprofits who focus on Latino outreach to distribute these masks and to distribute even financial resources. I've mentioned this in so many stories I've written in the last few months, but basically, if you are an undocumented farm worker, you don't qualify for unemployment. If you become unemployed, you kind of just have a savings account, if you have one, to fall back on. They did not receive the stimulus money that we saw at the beginning of the pandemic. So it's largely fallen on nonprofits to figure out ways to, you know, help these people who are in charge of working in the fields every day to feed us. So so there was a mask distribution event this week across the Community Council of Idaho's offices across the state, and basically from talking to people who are picking up masks and people distributing masks, you know, a lot of people still are unaware that you have to wear a mask, and you know, some farmers are not giving their employees masks. So, you know, it's just something to think about, like you mentioned, Gemma, that, you know, just because you and I are, you know, educated and know how to stay safe during the pandemic doesn't mean everyone around us is.
Well, 100%, Rachel, and it's our job to help get that message out as well. So Kevin, I mean, in the midst of a pandemic and everything that is going on, politics is still alive and well, as is apparent. But one of the things we're seeing is a challenger to House Speaker Scott Bedke.
This was kind of a surprise earlier this week. Wendy Horman, a Republican from Idaho Falls, went public with her plan to challenge Scott Bedke, who's been Speaker of the House now, I believe, for 8 years. These are in-house elections. The Republican caucus will meet. I think they're going to meet virtually because it's 2020. But it's an in-house election. It's held behind closed doors. So we don't really, as reporters, know exactly who votes for whom. But, you know, it's pretty common knowledge within the caucus who votes for whom. You know, you got 58 House Republicans who will make this decision. Representative Horman would need to get 30 votes from Republicans to unseat Scott Bedke. And you have to wonder, are there that many Republicans who want to change, who are maybe dissatisfied with the speaker, maybe feel like they've been denied a committee assignment that they really wanted, or that their legislation hasn't moved forward as they would like? You'd have to kind of cobble together all of those dissatisfied, disaffected Republicans to get to a critical mass of 30 votes. It's not easy to do, but I should point out that Scott Bedke was elected speaker pretty much the same way. He unseated then Speaker Lawrence Denny, who's now the Secretary of State. So it can happen. It does happen. It just doesn't happen very often.
I want to thank all of you for taking time out of your Friday to talk with us and get us updated. And just to be clear to all of our listeners, Idaho's largest healthcare system is projecting a crisis in December that they will have to go to triage care. We're talking about St. Luke's Health System. St. Alphonsus said that they will see it at the beginning of January. So, not as a journalist, but as one person to another, do your part. Wear a mask. Do not get together at Thanksgiving. We know it's hard. We all miss our family and our friends. Just do the right thing, folks. Thank you guys so very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gemma. Stay safe.
Yeah, you too. We will have more Idaho Matters next.